The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. And we'll squeeze a few calls in here before Thomas DiLorenzo joins me, because we're going to talk about Trump in a different way, why he actually reformed Federal Reserve and saved the economy. We'll talk about that. Holly Morton's here. Hey, Holly, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm getting pretty tired of the rules for me and not for thee that we're experiencing. You know, this business, first of all, President Biden used a shooting metaphor, put a target on Trump's head.
Yeah,
metaphor. Mm-hmm. And you know, and everybody that's fine. He was just being himself. But on January 6th, let's walk peacefully and respectfully to the Capitol. Oh my gosh, that's a dog whistle for let's start a riot. It's just infuriating to me, and I think we need to be holding people accountable for the messages they send, the metaphors that they put out there, and the things that they create, essentially. I was furious about that. And, you know, it's like having somebody sock you in the nose and then say, okay, now everything's fine. Don't be mad about it. You know, just, you know.
Well, you know, and frankly, Biden talking about lowering the temperature. Who's been raising the temperature in the first place the last 4 years?
Well, that's exactly my point.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for making it too, Holly. Let me go to Ron. Hello, Ron. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Bill. So I realized you'd have a pretty hot Monday, and I'll get right to the point here. I've been thinking about this, and you have to entertain some uncomfortable possibilities about organized effort. Everything's there in terms of the stack of justifications that would enable a government entity to. Well, we've already seen the misuse of the Justice Department, so forth and so on, relative to this individual. Here's my question, mm-hmm. and I think it's primary. So Secret Service has a term, CS, for counter-sniper. They post snipers, rooftop snipers, in elevated positions, in critical positions. There should have been one on that building. Here's where it boils down to something. Were the existing rooftop snipers trained on that rooftop position where the shooter was before the shooter appeared?
I can't answer that, but that's a good question, isn't it?
Yes, because it reveals a potential pre-existing perception or recognition of the events that were going to unfold. So the question I'm asking is very uncomfortable. I don't like it. And I do acknowledge that the department itself could very well have a devious plan that other individuals don't know about. This is not to say that homogeneously the Secret Service knew of, you know, a terrible plan that was in place. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying there could be a faction. There could be a difference. There could have been, and in my opinion, the door was left open. That's inexcusable.
But that's what I was wondering too. How much was intentional through a
absolutely
yeah. Like we're going to make sure that, and the other thing I'd like to find out though is how did this kind of know nothing kid, this guy, this young man, how do you know that was the place to go? And it just.
Yep.
You know, it's not ringing true, okay? Appreciate the call there, Ron. Let me go to Steve. Steve, a quick one. I got Thomas DiLorenzo going to talk with him about Trump in another way in just a moment. What are you thinking? Go ahead.
So in 2003, I was an aircraft mechanic, transferred out to San Francisco after 9/11. And Air Force One came into San Francisco, and they told us, make sure you have all your tools with you. You can't walk across the tarmac. Secret Service was on the roof. I was in the building. Bush was an aircraft wing away from me, mm-hmm. standing framed in his door. Nobody had checked us because we came to work before the Secret Service got there. I had a good minute. I could have taken him out with a pistol. I wouldn't have needed a rifle. So the Secret Service just can't do everything all the time. I mean, if I was a...
And I would agree with you, but when you know that you're going to be at this one particular fairgrounds, you would think that the first thing you would do is touch on any roof that's within rifle range, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, that was. I mean, the Secret Service was on the roof of the hangar, but they weren't in the hangar.
Yeah.
Where we were.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing the story there. Really do appreciate that. Thomas DiLorenzo joining me next on the Bill Myers Show.
Johnny Cash recorded
633 at 770-KMED. Here's Bill Meyer.
Proud to have Thomas J. DiLorenzo on. He's the president of the Mises Institute. And if you're unfamiliar with the Mises Institute, well, you really should get familiar with it. It's a nonprofit organization, and they promote teaching and research in the Austrian School of Economics, along with individual freedom, honest history, and international peace in the tradition of Ludwig von Mises and Murray and Rothbard. And, of course, by the way, well, first off, welcome, Thomas. We appreciate you taking a few minutes this morning. Good morning, sir.
Well, my pleasure. Glad to be with you.
You're the author of Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Arch Enemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means for Americans Today. And as far as I'm concerned, probably one of the must-reads, and I know that a lot of my Republican friends will not like me saying this, but the real Lincoln is, because like I said, you're into real history rather than the whitewashed history that seems to happen so much around us these days. Would that be fair?
Well, yeah, that's my preference, yes.
Yeah. And
Lincoln was the political son of Alexander Hamilton.
The political son. And of course, when you're talking about Hamilton's curse, Sal Jefferson's archenemy betrayed the American Revolution. And I'll tell you a quote, and one of the reasons I wanted to always bring you on here, and when I was given the opportunity, I jumped at this. Tom from Talent, longtime listener of mine, always calls it and says, words to the effect of, Bill, you know, as long as we have the Federal Reserve and this elastic currency, the funny money machine, and we know we're never really going to be a free people again. And I tell him, I said, well, I would agree with you, Tom, but the Federal Reserve is never on the ballot, right? It wasn't on the ballot the first time when it was created. Back in 1913. Yep. So where do we find ourselves right now? And we're probably going to see President Trump the way it's looking right now. It's, you know, who knows at this point, but might President Trump do anything that might rein in the Fed's agenda? Because nobody worries about the real economy right now, Tom. It seems to be, what is the Fed doing with interest rates? What is it doing? What does the Fed say? What does the Fed say? It's like the Fed is the economy. How do you see it?
Yeah, it's the chairman of the Fed is treated like the Wizard of Oz. You know, he's this big head up in the sky with clouds swirling around, and everybody's just on pins and needles waiting for the next announcement about a 0.125% interest rate drop that they're all praying for. And so it really is our version of a central planning bureaucracy. And the Fed is in charge of the money supply and has been for 111 years now. And on top of that, it regulates just about every type of financial transaction that goes on in America. It's not just monetary policy. It really is a big bloated central planning bureaucracy. And it's really an un-American thing when you think about it, that we should put all the money in the hands of politicians. In fact, the very first central bank was called the Bank of the United States. It was championed by Hamilton. You mentioned my book, Hamilton's Curse. And Thomas Jefferson, his nemesis, said, well, there's nothing in the Constitution that would allow that. And the Constitutional Convention debated it and voted no. Therefore, it's unconstitutional. And that's when Hamilton invented the idea of implied powers. He basically said, well, if you read between the lines, we can make an argument for a bank run by politicians and put it in charge of all the money in circulation. Which, and operate in secret. Don't let anybody know what goes on. It's never been audited, the Fed. And so they got the first version of the Fed, the Bank of the United States, and it was so corrupt and it created such economic instability that it was closed down after 20 years. Then it was brought back to finance the War of 1812. And then 20 years later, President Andrew Jackson defunded it because it did the same thing. It created corrupted politics by financing politically favored politicians in their campaigns. It created boom and bust cycles, created price inflation. We didn't want that. And so we went all those years from 1840 until 1913 without a government-run bank. But, it eventually was brought back. And now, the price level, the consumer price index, was basically the same in 1913 when the Fed was created, as 1789 when the Constitution was ratified. But then since then, the price level has gone up, maybe 40 times. So what you could have bought for $100 in 1913 would cost you about $3,000 today to buy the same stuff. And that's what we've got from the Fed.
Why have we decided there, or why has the system decided that this is the way to go rather than just Congress coining and regulating money, which is a constitutional power? You know, that is there.
Yes, the Constitution says coining of money. It doesn't say printing of money by a bank run by politicians at all. And, well, it was created at a time when there were all these regulatory agencies that were captured by corporations and to benefit corporations. And, you know, we finally did end the Civil Aeronautics Board during the Carter years, which was organized a cartel arrangement for the airline industry. They made it illegal to cut prices on airfares. And it was so egregious and such a ripoff of the average person that even Ted Kennedy and Ralph Nader were in favor of getting rid of the Civil Aeronautics Board.
Remember that.
And the Fed was created around the same time by the banking industry, basically to run a government-run cartel for the benefit primarily of the banking industry and its appendages, like the real estate industry and the mortgage banking industry and so forth. And so those are the people who primarily benefit from it. Those protesters of 10, 15 years ago, the Wall Street protesters, they were protesting the one percenters. They didn't seem to be very attuned to economics, but they had the right idea. They knew who was benefiting from the Fed. They were protesting Wall Street, the one percenters primarily. And then when Ron Paul ran for the Republican nomination, he added some substance, some economic substance to that. By explaining why the Fed is a culprit that benefits maybe some stock investors, Wall Streeters, real estate investors, but at the expense of the rest of us with price inflation and these never-ending boom and bust cycles.
Now, wasn't the Fed created to supposedly eliminate the boom and bust cycle?
Yeah, that's what they promised. But, politicians, believe it or not, politicians don't always keep their promises. You know, I learned that just recently.
I'm ready to spit my coffee out. I'm starting to laugh.
Gee, we've had 111 years of experience with that. And even President Obama's former chief economist, her academic career at Berkeley was based on a series of studies showing that the economy became more unstable after the Fed than it was before the Fed. We had the highest inflation rates in history during the regime of the Fed. And the booms and busts, the inflationary periods and the recessions and the depressions tended to be longer and more severe after the Fed was created than it was before the Fed was created. So we've got all this experience. So that was just another big lie told by the politicians at the time to justify putting all this power in their hands. And, the Fed is basically a legalized counterfeiting operation. It convinces us we can get something for nothing. You know, if the government were to say, we're going to send another $100 billion to Ukraine, but we're going to pay for it with taxes this time. We're not going to print money to pay for it. So every working family is going to be sent a bill for $10,000. I bet you'd see a lot fewer Ukraine bumper stickers in America if we did that. And the same is true with any government policy. It helps disguise the cost of what government is doing. Which is why politicians like it. They don't have to vote for a tax increase.
Yeah, well, the Fed is inflation, though, right? Isn't essentially the Fed the and I love how the Fed has this arbitrary, well, we want the inflation rate to be 2%, so we want a guaranteed stealing of the value of your money at all times, right?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. The whole latter part of the 19th century, after the Civil War to the turn of the century, was a period of deflation. Prices went down the whole time. Because it was the Industrial Revolution in America, and that was a good thing. You know, your wage, your paycheck went farther. But with all the price inflation created by the Fed, your paycheck goes, shorter distance. And so there's nothing wrong with deflation, but the Fed has announced this policy that the minimum is 2%. And, of course, it's always more than that. And they're lying about it now. I don't believe for one minute.
Okay, well, what do you think the real inflation rate is? They say right now it's like 3%. A little over 3,
right?
I think it's
probably closer to 15 or 20%. You know, you look at things like just apartment rental prices are up 30% in the past 3 years. Gas is up 46% on average in the past 3 years. And they're telling us, oh, it's only 3%. And so I think they're lying about this. to make themselves look good. What else would you expect? That's what politicians do on both parties, by the way. And not every single one of them, you know, they're honest people in politics, but on this, they're lying.
Hmm. Let me ask then about the choice between Biden and Trump. It is a binary choice, and, you know, neither individual is perfect because we're human. We all have our flaws. But is it not the case that normally, even when someone thinks that they may want to rein in the Fed, once you become president, then you want low interest rates? It seems like that seems to be a pretty common thing. Would that be fair to say?
Well, yeah. You know, when anybody who takes an economics course in college, one of the first things you're taught is that price controls are a bad idea. And it's usually talked about price controls on consumer goods. Like if you put up price controls on bread, well, people will buy more bread. But then it takes some of the profit, or maybe all of the profit, out of selling bread.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with shortages. And that creates even more problems. But the rate of interest is a price. And so even the economists seem to forget this, that when you come to the Fed is controlling this price. It's controlling the price of interest and holding it down. And it would be much better off economically without that. And that's what creates a lot of the booms. That's what created the stock market boom. That's the main cause. And that's what created caused the Great Depression. And that's what created the Great Recession of 08. It was pursuing zero interest rates. And then the government was, sort of enforcing a policy of subprime loans, forcing mortgage lenders to make bad loans to unqualified borrowers. But the key ingredient was the low interest rates policy of the Fed. And that is sort of an economic war on retired people, by the way, because if you're retired and you're on a relatively fixed income with maybe an annuity and Social Security, you can get, 1% interest before taxes.
Isn't it true that about everything, just about everything that's happened over the last 10 years since the Great Recession, so to speak, that time, has been robbing savers? And everyone had to become a speculator in order to try to keep up. You had to pile into the stock market because, you'd see no interest rates or 0.5% on a savings account, that kind of thing.
That's right. A lot of people who have no business speculating on the stock market are forced into it because they can't make anything. They see they're losing money. They see inflation eroding the value of their lifelong savings for retirement. And so they jump in and speculate on the market, and they can lose big time in doing that. And in the meantime, it's fueling the stock market, and so the big boys they're all fat and happy in terms of the Wall Street investors. But that's a bubble. It's going to crash eventually. And there's a bubble in the car market, there's a bubble in college tuition market, and that's what the Fed has done for 111 years: create bubbles and boom and bust.
And basically, the last 10 years hasn't it been trying to reinflate the real estate bubble? Is what it looks like to me.
Yeah, in a lot of places it is. I have friends in Las Vegas, and they tell me the housing prices are even higher than they were at the eve of the bursting of the bubble in 08 in Vegas.
Well, and people are saying, well, gosh, people can't afford houses. Right. You hear that all the time. Right, Thomas? Thomas J. DiLorenzo, by the way, with me. He's the president of the Mises Institute. People say they can't afford houses at today's interest rates. And doesn't that in essence mean that that the prices of homes are wrong, so to speak? And I say this as someone who's buying a home. I mean, I bought a home 8-9 years ago, with it. And I refinanced at 3%. Hey, I'm fat and happy. I like that. But realistically, there's nothing that can support the real estate values that we have right now except the continued Fed focus on trying to keep the interest rates low. Isn't that the case?
That's one part of it. But, just the overall printing of money and the stimulation of demand also, increase the demand for housing. And the supply of housing doesn't grow very fast because we have a huge stock of housing out there. And even if there's a building boom, it's only going to increase, year by year, the actual supply of housing by a tiny percentage. And so the increased demand from all the cheap money fuels the housing market and drives up the housing price. So not only are mortgage interest you know, mortgage interest rates are up, you know, what, and home insurance, by the way, homeowner insurance up almost 40% in 4 years. And so, and the Fed has caused that. The Fed has caused the housing market to be unaffordable. And you probably have heard stories or talked about them on your show of young people getting out of college thinking they can't see how they could ever own a house.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you will own nothing and be happy. If you start wondering if the Federal Reserve is part of the World Economic Forum, ultimately. I hope not.
Yeah, well, it's the same crowd. I mean, if you went to a Davos conference, I'm sure you'd see some Fed bureaucrats there.
Yeah. Do you think that people, that more and more Americans are figuring this out, Thomas DiLorenzo, that the Fed is really screwing us and, you know, it's really the money powers that benefit from its existence, not we the people?
Oh, sure. You know, when Ron Paul was running for the Republican nomination, he went to give a speech at the University of Michigan, which is, you know, another liberal bastion of higher education. And the students started spontaneously chanting, "End the Fed," because so they had apparently read some of his speeches. And by the way, I want to make a pitch for the Mises Institute. We're in the middle right now of giving away 100,000 copies of a book called What Has Government Done to Our Money? Mm-hmm. And any of your listeners could get on our website, Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org, and find the link where you can apply, and we'll send you free books on What Has Government Done to Our Money by Murray Rothbard.
I have to ask you, is there a difference between Fed policy, you think, between the, you know, Trump, who will be the Republican nominee, and Biden? Is there any difference that you can see any daylight between the two?
No, well, when Trump was president, he was arguing for even lower interest rates at the same time. He's a real estate guy, after all. He's a developer.
Oh.
And he's part of the 1% that has benefited his entire life from the Fed. And so I think Donald Trump would be more open-minded to talking to someone like me about this and appointing a Fed chairman, you know, more like more to our likings. It wasn't quite as much of an inflationist as Powell or somebody that Biden would recommend. And of course, the Fed itself, the other appointee, the Board of Governors, they've been engaged in spending a lot of money on research on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and climate change, and all these
left-wing
fads. And so, you know, we got that. And I doubt that Trump would do that. I think he could be convinced to take a more moderate viewpoint, even though he's a real estate developer. And so, yeah, he knows the value of that. But that distorts our decision-making. You know, savings is a very important part of driving our economy. That's where borrowing comes from, for capital investment, for startup businesses, for the Shark Tank investors and all that. It's just the capital markets. And so when we discourage savings, we also are discouraging investment in business and in the economy, you know, because there's less capital available overall. The pool of savings is lower. And so this war on savings has a very big downside in that regard.
You know, it's interesting that so much of the inflation that we had ended up being generated, would you agree, from the COVID relief checks, the hot checks that were written and sent to everybody. Would you agree?
Well, paid for by funny money printed by the Fed, yes. That just added an additional, push to that. And of course, they when I was in school, they called it monetary inflation, but now they started calling it quantitative easing. But the average person, one must think, what the heck is that? Quantitative what? But so they use funny terms like that now that makes it even harder for the average person to understand what is going on. But yeah, that's true. All those checks they printed added to the inflation.
How would our life change, Thomas, if we were to at some point get the brains and say we no longer want to have a banking cartel, and that we're not going to have a centrally controlled banking cartel, and we're going to actually have a real, you know, real money, so to speak? How would it change?
Real money backed by gold and silver or something like that, like the whole world did for 3,000 years before governments got into the banking business and took over the banks. We would have more economic stability, less price inflation. It wouldn't be perfect. Nothing on earth is perfect. But it would be better. It would be better than the system we have now if we had money that was based on something other than the promises of politicians. And you know what value is that?
Would not the ending the Fed essentially slash the government 60-70%? Because I was just thinking about just one policy which just irritates the daylights out of me. The government granting tax credits actually will write you checks for when you buy an electric car. How they were doing that for all these years. Remember that? You know, certainly are aware of that. If they were actually going out there and saying, every one of you people are going to have to pay more so that rich liberals can buy an electric car, right?
Yeah. Let them pay the full price for their electric car. That's just a that's a substitute for rich liberals who like to virtue signal by riding around an electric car, and the whole industry seems to be imploding. By the way, from all the things I've been reading about it, the Fed creates what economists call a fiscal illusion. That's some economics lingo. It makes government, whatever government is doing, it makes it sound cheaper. It appears cheaper because the part of the cost is hidden. It's hidden in that inflation. It's hidden in the crowding out of private spending by the government. And it enables government to expand everywhere. And even Adam Smith wrote a famous book 200-some years ago, The Wealth of Nations, wrote about how he thought wars, for example, would be shorter and less frequent if they were paid for by taxes. And if you had to tell people, okay, we're under threat of attack, I think most Americans, if they really thought there was really a threat of an invasion or an attack on our country, would gladly pay up. The volunteer army would be exploding, as it did after 9/11, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's a different ballgame altogether if you tell people it's not going to cost you anything. We're going to just print up money.
Well, look at what happened. You know, if they were to say instead, okay, we're sending $100 billion to Ukraine, we're going to send a few billion here over to Taiwan, we're going to send a bunch of billions over to Israel. By the way, look for a surcharge on your income tax, you know, this year to pay for it. Can you imagine what would happen then, where things would go?
Yeah. Yeah, there'd be a lot less war in the world and a lot more negotiated peace, that's for sure. And, that's exactly the point. And we wouldn't have that. If it weren't for the Fed, we wouldn't have that. The Fed was started in 1913, and it immediately financed a big part, maybe 25 or 30% of the entry into World War One, which had nothing to do with us here in this country anyway. It was a European conflict. And we never should have gotten into World War One. Had nothing to do with us, and it eventually led to Hitler and Stalin and all these horrible things of the 20th century.
And by the way, our financiers financed that side of the war machine too.
Yeah. The Fed financed probably 25 or 30% of that whole thing, and we wouldn't have been able to do that without the Fed. And of course, we got the income tax at the same time, the same year, under Woodrow Wilson, we got the Fed and the income tax, which enabled us to do those things.
Thomas J. DiLorenzo, president of the Mises Institute, nonprofit organization to promote teaching and research in the Austrian School of Economics. Now, Tom, when we a few minutes ago, you had mentioned that you're giving away a free book on Mises, Mises.org. And what was that called again? What's it called?
What Has Government Done to Our Money? By Murray Rothbard. We're giving away 100,000 copies. So if you go on our website, you'll find the link to sign up, and we'll send you free books.
All right.
And you can share them with friends and family.
I appreciate it greatly. And thanks so much for having shared your thoughts on this. And is economic collapse, in your opinion, ultimately baked in our cake right now? Are we perhaps even experiencing it right now, even though things appear to be operating normally? How do you see it? I'll give you the final word on that.
Yeah, I'm worried about what will happen after the election. The Fed is artificially pumping up the economy now, as it always does, because they want the incumbent party to win. But then after the election, I think we're going to see even more price inflation. And nobody can predict when a crash will take place, but I think there's a bubble in the stock market again, and there's a bubble in real estate again. And so hold on to your wallet.
All right. Interesting times once again as we opened up this interview this morning, Thomas. Thomas, great pleasure having you on. I look forward to having you back on in the future. You do go out.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Thomas J. DiLorenzo, president of the Mises Institute. This is the Bill Myers Show.
When you choose a contractor, how do you know you're getting the best? Anyone can claim to be the area's top, but numbers don't lie. When you
hire 772 sold. That's 541-772-7653. Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty.
Hi, I'm Matt Stone, owner of Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on 106.3 KMED.
Appreciate you being here. Open phones, and it's a couple of days after the debate. The assassination attempt, pardon me, had a Biden moment. You always have to keep saying that, right? But, and is there anything that you're not hearing being talked about that you think should be talked about? Or why don't you just give me your overall reaction? Where were you? Were you actually watching it when the assassination attempt to President Trump ended up happening? Like I said, I was getting ready for a dinner. Holly and Jim were coming over, and then we found out, and then it just immediately turned it on. And in fact, Linda never, ever wants us eating dinner in front of the television. We're not that kind of family, right? We do this. And then Holly and Jim come over. We got the lasagna. We got everything else. So they brought the dessert and various other things, and we're all set. And so we ended up grabbing the pub table. Let's all head into the living room. So we all go into the living room, and we're, you know, eating our lasagna and watching the blow-by-blow account. But are you believing everything you're hearing, or there's some things that aren't ringing true to you? Or, in other words, I'm just going to throw it wide open to you here in the next few minutes. Go ahead and join in. 770-5633, 770-KMED. Like I said, the only part that's really the part of the whole thing is as far as the shooter, I noticed that Occupy Democrats, you know, that group online, has made a big deal that he was a registered Republican, but he donated $15 to a progressive cause of Joe Biden's. And I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where he was, and it's hard to figure out what a 20-year-old's politics are. This guy apparently had very little social media footprint. I don't know a lot about him. I know that he was bullied, he was a loner. Not that this makes an excuse, but this almost seems to be like out of stock character assassination conspiracy.com, you know, sort of thing. And his classmates that were in high school with him, they would say stuff like, yeah, he was bullied a lot. He was kind of weird. Even after COVID, he was still wearing his mask. And the mask was kind of a political uniform there. Well, it still is, you know, for many in some cases. So as far as his politics, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure. And they're trying to figure it out. They can't get into his phone. I don't know if do you think we're ever going to tell the truth? Do you think the FBI will really tell us the truth? My gosh, the FBI and others don't want to have the, you know, the transgender shooter at the Christian school. Oh, they want to lock that all the way because it spreads the wrong kind of narrative. We're never supposed to know what we actually observe. But what's your overall reaction and feelings about this? Trump have it in the bag, too? 770-5633. Happy to take your call. Let me go to first line. Good morning. Welcome. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Tracy, normally the caller out of the Central Valley of California. But hey, Today I'm between the beltways, between Baltimore and Washington, D.C. here. And obviously it's the talk of the area, given the high concentration of government
people. I'll bet. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a very interesting profile put up by the Post-Gazette, I think it is, the Pittsburgh newspaper,
yeah,
regarding the shooter. And a couple things that keyed off. Well, first off, the father is a libertarian. The mother's a registered Democrat. So, you know, the kid's been influenced by a lot of different politics over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just received an associate's degree in, like, engineering science. And, you know, while he was doing work at a nursing home, which is probably what he didn't want to end up doing, you know, I think there's a key piece in this Post-Gazette article about the shooter is that during high school, he studied – they did like a term project you do in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He did one on the Kennedy assassination with a fellow classmate.
Really?
Yes.
Boy, that really is a key little nugget there, huh? Hmm.
Yeah. Now, and also, you know, I see a trend going on. The father was like a psychiatrist or psychologist and is, you know, had published documents you know, papers and whatnot. So he's well known, and they were a well off family. And but you see that sometimes, you know, the parents are upright and straight, and then the kids go off and go into Looney Tunes. And so this is kind of a repeating pattern for me, is to see that happening.
Tracy, I really appreciate you bringing that to my attention. I'm going to have to dig that up. Gosh,
yeah,
I haven't read a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette since I was a kid, so it's about time.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so anyway, they seem to have a good article about that, and so delve into it. By the way, I'm due see on NC Web the Salt Creek Fire.
Yep.
And the last they had reported was 41%. So
yep.
I don't know what the percentage is, if there's any updates. I'm sure Greg Roberts is well on top.
Yeah, we kind of set that aside right now because it's not real bad here in Southern Oregon right now. The real problem are the poor folks that are dealing with the Shelley Fire in Northern California. That thing's just a mess.
Yeah.
Just a hot mess, unfortunately. Okay?
Okay, and the weather back here is just as miserable. But it's that humidity, so it's 110 with the heat index.
Oh my gosh! Oh
yeah.
My gosh! Yeah, I remember what it was like there on the East Coast, Eastern Seaboard, with those summertime temperatures. 80 degrees and 80% humidity feels a lot worse than 104 and 15% humidity. I assure you.
By the way, before I left Central California the other day, I clocked it on my accurate thermometer in my car. It was 115 in Fresno.
Oh man. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Tracy. Good hearing from you. 770-5633. Just kind of noodling around with whatever. We can talk everything Trump, anything else on your mind here, too. Good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
This is Margaret in Central Point.
Hi, Margaret. Welcome.
Hi. I have the Epoch Times, and so they are always up to date on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reporting that the FBI has already determined that he was a lone operator. No, nothing you see here. Let's get on with it. And, of course, Uncle Joe has called for a swift and complete investigation, so we know that will be swift. We know how complete that will be.
Well, by the way, there's really not much to see here because, remember, CNN reported Secret Service rushes Trump off stage after he falls at rally.
You see? What are we getting so upset about? It's just a little fall, for goodness sake. He nicked his ear when he fell.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah.
We're laughing, but it's not funny, right? Anyway, hi, KMED and KBXG. Who is this?
It's Jerry.
Jerry. Welcome, Jerry the Bull. Yeah. What's up?
Hey, well, you were asking a minute ago, what were we doing when this all happened? I was actually reading some email and an article, and in the article that I was reading, it said that the multi-million-dollar Democratic donors were giving Biden 48 hours to basically get out of the race, or they were going to withhold their funding.
Yeah, I read that similar report there, too.
Mm-hmm. And I listened to, I don't know if you're, I'm not that familiar with him, but Clayton Morris on Redacted.
Yeah, I don't know much about him. But anyway, please continue.
Anyway, he has a background in media, and he was talking about how if those donors did that, it would really affect the media because they rely a lot on those donations during the campaign season or something to that effect.
Sure, advertising buys. You bet.
Hmm. And anyway, and then the next thing, you know, I heard that Trump was shot and people were discussing it. Anyway.
Jerry, did you ever suspect anything about this? Does anything ring not true or just improbable on this? I mean, I know I was talking with a former Secret Service agent this morning, Gary Byrne, and he had talked about how strapped they had been for personnel there. But I
and
I would agree, it does sound like they have been starving for good people, and good people get out because they just beat the crap out of you when you're an agent. They just work you ceaselessly from the sounds of it.
Right.
But I cannot believe that there is that much of a lack of curiosity about a roof around 140 yards away from the stage that nobody was covering.
I don't have the Secret Service background, but I've heard, I listened to people who were CIA people and Secret Service people, and they said the same thing. They said that the basic protocol is you secure everything, and they believe that there would have been a Secret Service sniper on the roof instead of, you know, some ordinary person up there.
Yeah, and certainly, of course, I don't know, maybe there weren't enough people from Butler Police available to do this, because Butler Police was doing a lot of this.
Quick question, Bill, since we're on this subject.
Sure.
I was talking to my dad yesterday, and as I recall, when Trump was president, I believe, probably in addition to the Secret Service, he may have had Eric Prince's group as a private security. But I don't know if that I'm right or wrong on that. That's been 6 or 7 years ago, probably.
Let me take a quick.
It was called Black something.
It
Black
wasn't group, not or, Black Rock though, right? Not or Black no, Hawk. No, okay.
I don't know what it was called, but I believe Eric Prince was related to Trump's appointee in the Department of Education, the lady from Amway, whatever her name is.
Yeah, I'm looking this up, not seeing much about Eric Prince. It does say that Eric helped raise money for him. I'm going to have to probably look into that a little bit, a little bit more. But you know, when it comes right down to it, we're talking about if Trump had not turned his head, if the shooter had done a better job of probably estimating what the wind drift was going to be on something like that, we probably wouldn't be talking about the attempt this morning. That's for sure. All right. Appreciate the calls. And let me go to the next line. Hi, KMED, KBXG. Who's this?
It might just be Super Dave.
Yeah. Hey, who's this now?
Super Dave.
Oh, hey, Super Dave. Welcome. Good to hear from you.
Yay. Yeah. So, you know, you're asking where we was when it all went down.
Yeah.
In the Rocky Mountains.
No kidding.
The Teton Valley.
No kidding.
Been up doing some razor riding about 8,000 feet. Came down and set up camp, turned on the radio, went, oh, shinola.
Really. You know, it's another one of those things, like people would always say, where were you when Kennedy was shot, or MLK was shot, or RFK was shot, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes. Mm. Yep.
Or Reagan. Or Reagan was shot, right?
Yeah. It was kind of watching the video on that. It, you know, you think about Reagan, and it was about a second and a half, and he was in, and they were gone. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like it took him a while to actually get up and get him tackled. You know, obviously you don't hold him down because you don't know what's going on next.
Yeah, well, Gary Byrne, the Secret Service agent, was telling me that Trump, you know, does what he wants a lot of times, and he's a big guy, you know, so that may have had something to do with that.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. With the smoke, we're enjoying the Oregon smoke over here in eastern Idaho, too.
Ah, God bless you. God bless you for enjoying our Oregon smoke diversity over in where you say the Rocky Mountains, right?
Yeah, eastern Idaho.
Okay. Falls, eastern Idaho. All right. Thank you for the call, Super Dave. 770-5633. If you are on hold, I will get right with you, and we'll take some more open phones here. Dr. Powers will join us in a few minutes, but I want to squeeze some in.